No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. Along with my co-host, Maria Sanchez, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the conversation by calling in at 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Or you can Skype us at BBSRadio and the number one, BBS Radio 1. Tonight, we have a special guest, Michael Baer, who's a teacher from California, has put a petition up on moveon.org, and it's to eliminate the Electoral College. And Michael's here to talk to us about why he wants to do that and how it's going and how people are reacting. And this is part of a series that Maria and I intend to run over the next several weeks to try to figure out what exactly this election says to America and how we move forward as a country working together to make this a better place for all of us to live. Keep it the same great place it is. But let us introduce our guest. First, let me say hello to Maria. Maria, are you there?
I am. Hi, Michael. Okay. Welcome. How are you?
I'm good.
Good. You know what? There's nothing better than hearing your juices flowing, and you're on it today. And just prior to our going on the air, I said, hey, under the 23rd Amendment, the District of Columbia is allocated 3 electors and treated like a state for the purposes of the Electoral College. And you're like, yeah, we're a state. And then if you go to the page that lists the electoral votes for the states, it only lists the 50 states. It doesn't give your 3 electors. So are you always in the process or sometimes or what?
Those bums. Yes, we're always in the process. But you know what? It took the 23rd. We are the 23rd Amendment to the Constitution. It took the 23rd Amendment to the Constitution to make that happen. So we're not naturally in the process under Article 2 of the Constitution the way everybody else is. We're like a special exemption add-on at the end. And the truth of the matter is we're really not equal because the 23rd Amendment says we're allowed to have as many electoral votes as the smallest state, which at the time was Wyoming. So
interestingly enough, though, Alaska has 3, Delaware has 3, North Dakota has 3, Vermont has 3, South Dakota has 3, Wyoming has 3. So you're right up there with those states.
Right. And the reason they have 3 is because it's based on the number of members of Congress that you have. So, for example, California has 55, and Texas has 38. But the point is that if the population of Washington, D.C., ever match the population of California, we'd be in a lot of trouble, but you would still have 55 and we would still only have 3.
We here in California, 55, the closest to us is New York. Right. And I thought they were pretty populous. They only have 29.
No, Texas has 38.
Okay. Texas, you're right. 38, but still we're the tail that's wagging the dog. California is.
Well, that's fitting for California, isn't it? No offense, you know.
By the way, we here in California voted that if you use plastic bags at a grocery store, it has to be, are being charged 10 cents per bag. And ordinarily, most things that are voted in November go into effect January 1st. Oh, no, that went into effect 2 days after the election. So,
I'll be damned.
It's actually made a difference. I always load up my trunk. I have two vehicles with those reusable bags. I never think to bring it in because I get the plastic bags and I use that for recycling and I use that for my household trash. Well, yesterday I went to the grocery store and I thought, I'll be damned if I'm going to pay the damn 10 cents. And I went back to the trunk of my car. So it's working.
Well, I can tell you, we've had it here for a while, and it's 5 cents. And the most amazing thing to me is to see some woman in a, $1,000 suit walking out of the Safeway with all her stuff bundled in her arms to get into her BMW, to get into her BMW so that she doesn't have to pay the 5 cents. Because it annoys people. It does.
Well, it's funny because it so far it hasn't extended to like our CVS and Rite Aids. It's only been our grocery stores.
Everywhere here.
Yeah.
Everywhere.
Oh, okay.
Even carry out food. So let's bring Michael on.
Okay.
Michael, are you there? Michael.
Yeah.
You're with us.
I am. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you fine. Tell us about your petition, Michael.
Listen to you, Michael. You're so excited.
I am excited.
Well, there are three different strategies out there. A lot of people are interested in the Electoral College again this year. They also were in 2000. And so our strategy, our petition is to specifically pass a constitutional amendment to eliminate the Electoral College and go to a popular vote, one person, one vote, to select the president, who's the only person, really, the only elected official that represents every person in the United States. He's the only one that has the constituency of every person in the United States.
But Michael, give the history, please, of your petition, because you've been around for a while. This isn't new.
Well, it's an interesting story, right? So I started this petition back in July of 2012, and it wasn't because there was, a lot going on with the Electoral College at that point. What happened was MoveOn.org, it was at that point that they started this program. They've been around, actually, since Monica Lewinsky, and it was they were making a point to not impeach President Clinton, but to just censor him, which is a bad slap on the wrist. Congress said, naughty, naughty, Mr. Clinton, and really, that's a bad thing, and it'll go down in history. I think there maybe has been one presidential censure or something like that in the history of the United States. So they were called Censure and Move On. And then they morphed into Move On. And in 2012, they started this idea of citizens initiatives to allow citizens to, start petitions for anything. And, they were mostly focused on local petitions or, state or county or any petition at all to let the citizens, empower citizens to start petition drives. So I just chose the Electoral College. I just thought, this is like, if you could change one thing about this country, that would be it in terms of a petition.
So, Michael, what was the impetus for you to do that? Over the first
4.5 years, I ended up with 2,000 signatures, a little more than one signature per day on average. And the day after the election, on November 9th, I checked in the middle of the day, something triggered me to go, I wonder what's going on with my petition. And it was at 25,000. And by the end of the day, it was at 40,000. And by the end of the second day, it was at 90,000. So, I'd forgotten about it for 3 years. Literally, I had not paid any attention during that interim. And now it's over 570,000 signatures today.
That's amazing. 570,000 signatures.
But here's my question, Michael. What was it in July of 2012 that had you create the impetus to create the petition about the Electoral College?
I remembered 2000, and I was pretty upset about it, the way it all played out. And actually, it's interesting. Well, that was a very close Electoral College. I just looked it up again. Bush won by 3 electoral votes. It was 271 to 268. So the other petition, the biggest petition out there right now is trying to get the electors to flip their votes. It was started on change.org. There's a man named Daniel Brezikoff or something like that who's working that one. And, you know, they're trying to flip 37 electors. But if it was happening in 2000, they would have only had to flip 2. You know, if it would have flipped 2 electors out of the 538 back then, Gore would have been president. And I kind of thought that that's what should have happened. Like, when Gore took it to the Supreme Court, you know, when first it was the Florida Supreme Court, the hanging chads, all that stuff, and then, you know, he decided, it went up the line, he decided to sue, and I thought that was a mistake. You know, at that time, I thought, wow, this is what the founders put the Electoral College in for, just for this situation. How did they know 200 years earlier they were going to get to this hanging chad, you know, what's happening in Florida situation, and you would have only had to flip 2 electors, and the process would have gone on until the electors voted. And I think by that time it was known that, you know, they continued to count the votes even after the Supreme Court said, you know, we're going to allow Florida to certify and give the electoral votes, Florida's votes, to Bush. But by the end of the counting, Gore had actually won Florida, and he would have won the Electoral College. But because he sued and because the Supreme Court voted 5-4, which basically installed Bush, you know, that didn't play out. So I think that was, you know, here it is 12 years later, I think that was still in my mind. We got robbed in that one. And therefore... it was because MoveOn had said now that, you know, created the platform. The reason I started in 2012 is that was when I was invited to start a petition, and it just, you know, I guess I was still remembering what happened in 2000.
What do you mean you were invited to start a petition?
Well, I was a member. They sent it out to the entire membership, and they have several million people now. I don't know how many they had back then, but they just they usually ask for money, but they said, hey, we're trying this new thing. If you want to start a petition, this is what we're doing. So that's
why
I
see.
It.
I see. So they invited you to start a petition, but not this petition in particular.
No, any citizen to start any petition about anything.
Right.
And I picked this.
So on the landing page, when you log into MoveOn.org, it's Stop Bannon, and then you're the next one that they're promoting on their front page.
Uh-huh. Wow.
And that's a lot. A lot of juice that's behind you.
Yeah, and maybe that's new. You know, the biggest, on Veterans Day, the biggest publicity, there's been two really big pushes. The biggest one was on Veterans Day, and Bill Maher was interviewing Eric Holder, former Attorney General. Mm-hmm. You know, a couple days after the election, and saying what's going on and blah blah blah, and Eric Holder said, you know, you got to get rid of this Electoral College, and they have on the sidebar, they have that our petition to move on, you know, the one I authored, and I also started a Facebook page, which I hope to talk about before I get off the air, because that's where. Okay, so I will talk about that. Anyway, so that was really exciting. The other thing was that there was a day about that same day or day before, day after, when Bernie Sanders, there was an article in the Huffington Post and probably made it other places, I saw it there, where Bernie Sanders spoke, hey, we need to rethink this Electoral College thing. And within that article, there was a link to the MoveOn.org petition.
So and I'm surprised that it stayed alive for 4 years. Because you
I was too, to be honest. No, really. The first week I got 200 signatures, and you know I was really excited because like I'm starting to get them from like all you know different states. I'm getting them from all over the country in that first week, but it just you know it sagged and it ran out of gas within like three months. Maybe it was at 400 signatures or something, and I just you know so oh well, nice try, whatever. Forgot about it. You know I just didn't you know went on to other things. And it wasn't until about maybe 6 months ago something triggered my memory. I think I was in a chat room or something, and people were talking about, you know, the problems with the election process here. And it just made me think, oh, yeah, I started a petition. I wonder what's going on. And I went back to look, you know, figured it would, you know, since I hadn't paid attention to it for a couple years, I figured it would be down, but it was still up, and it had like 1,100 signatures at that point. You know, it's like, oh, it's still going. And then I was noted, and so I started remembering it and, you know, posting this in various places. And then the last week before the election, I noticed it was getting like 5 or 10 signatures a day and getting close to 2,000.
Let's talk for a minute, Michael, about this thing you said, this other approach, which is to get electors to change their votes. Now,
right. There's actually two other major movements. And so the one at change.org has over 4.5 million signatures now. And the idea is because Hillary won the Electoral College, won the popular vote. But there's also, you know, language within the Constitution that basically gives the electors the freedom to vote their conscience, essentially. And, you know, given that Mr. Trump has no governing experience, some of the things he said during the campaign, which are anti-American, you know, if you will, in terms of civil rights and et cetera, and some of the appointments he's made, you know, to the different cabinet, that the elector, it's different in different states. I've just learned about this in the last 10 days, too. I'm no expert, but I'm learning a lot as we go along.
Well, I was going to say, when our time is over with you, Michael and I are going to kind of debrief our listeners on what it is and how and why.
Yeah.
Are we done already?
You know what? The question that I wanted to bring up to you, Michael.
Yeah.
Okay, is that since 1880, this has only been done 8 times. Only 8 electors have changed their votes from what we call the winner-take-all. So people know in 48 states there's a winner-take-all. It means that when Hillary Clinton won California, she gets all 55. It's not proportional.
Yeah, and like Pennsylvania, razor thin. Michigan, razor thin. You know, Michigan, he gets all 16, even though, you know, it was 49-48 or whatever. It's a really close election there.
And that's what people have a lot of problems. Some people have problems with. But people that don't vote the way the state goes, and this, it goes for 48 states, only Nebraska, I think.
And Maine.
And
have
Maine,
proportional.
But since 1880, only 8 people have been faithless electors. That's what they call people that change their vote, faithless electors. So only 8 people. In fact, one of them's from the District of Columbia, and one of them voted. Barbara Lett Simmons is the most recent one, probably. She voted for Al Gore. She was an Al Gore delegate. She refused to vote because the people of the District of Columbia don't have representation. But the point is that if you only have 8 faithless electors in 140 years, is it realistic to think that these guys...
I saw one statistic that said 17 in the history of the United States out of 19,000. So these are extraordinary times. I didn't start that petition. You know, it would only be like a one-time fix for this particular situation, this election only, and it seems as remote as getting a constitutional amendment. It's very, very difficult. I don't hold out a lot of hope for it. On the other hand, because these are such extraordinary circumstances, I really believe anything can happen. I don't really think history is going to be much of an indicator of what potentially might happen. And so basically, in my mind, I'm not pushing for it. I'm endorsing the idea, but it's not like where I'm putting my energy. But in my mind, you know, like like December 19th is another deadline. You know, that's when they actually vote for the president. You know, we didn't vote for the president. We did on our ballots, but, you know, that caused the electors to be selected, and they're the ones that are going to vote for the president officially to actually make it happen. So that's 30 days from today. That's 30 days from today, and all kinds of things might happen. All kinds of things might happen. And I don't. And it's a real long shot. It's a real long shot.
But Michael, doesn't your petition and the signatures have to get to delivered to someone somehow, some way?
Right. So according to my petition, and this is the way I set it up, it's to be delivered to the House of Representatives, the U.S. Senate, and the President. And
when?
So that's a question I'm talking to MoveOn.org about. It's pretty much up to me. My thought is, well, you know, I'm certainly going to be collecting signatures until the 19th. I'm not going to do it before then because this is a long process. And by the way, Barbara Boxer, who's our outgoing California retiring senator, did introduce legislation to abolish the Electoral College. So there's, you know, we won't get much traction. So my thought is, and technically on it I said President Barack Obama, but I'm thinking once Congress is sworn in, the new Congress is sworn in on January 3rd, and, you know, that's 2.5 weeks before the president will be sworn in. So I'm thinking that is the time to deliver it in that window between January 3rd and I think it's the 20th or whatever inauguration.
It is the 20th for the inauguration, except for on the 6th of January, the electoral votes are being counted in a joint session of Congress. So I would think you would want to have it delivered before then.
Well, maybe that's the window third to sixth. But, you know, they're not going to amend the Constitution to ban the Electoral College before then. You know, this is a longer term thing. But I do have, besides an incoming freshman senator, Kamala Harris, we've had a long-term. My district here in the Central Coast of California has been ably manned by a Democratic House member named Sam Farr for, I don't know, 26 years. He's been in like 17 terms, 34 years. I don't know, a long time. And he retired this time around, and he was replaced, elected by a man named Jimmy Panetta. And you might recognize that name because his father is indeed Leon Panetta, who comes from our district. So I'm thinking that Jimmy Panetta would be the perfect person, and either Kamala Harris and or Dianne Feinstein, you know, that those are the people that would be, you know, one from the House, one from the Senate, that those would be the recipients. And MoveOn.org has delivered petitions to Washington before, so I don't really know how that works. But I will be relying on MoveOn.org to help me figure it out. But like you said, between the 3rd, possibly between the 3rd and the 6th, I'm thinking between the 3rd and the 20th at this point. And we'll just have to see how it unfolds. One other last thing is, you know, one thing I have is the power of the pen is that I have the opportunity to write emails to all 570,000 people. Through MoveOn, they have the servers and stuff, but I have a dashboard where I can send emails to everybody who signed the petition. And
well,
this is getting exciting. So after the election, I sent an email to when I had 70,000 signers and said, if we get to 1 million, I will go to Washington to deliver it. And, you know, and then we got 250,000 more people signing up in the next couple of days. So I'm like, oh, I might have to actually go. So, and I feel like I made a promise to 70,000 people. So if it does get to 1 million, we're 500,000 now, and things have slowed quite a bit in the last 3 or 4 days, although it's picked up again today, got over 10,000 signatures today. And so if we get to 1 million by January 3rd, I'll be going to Washington.
Well, and we'll,
Mr.
you know,
Bear,
I'll drive you. I'll drive you up to Capitol Hill, Michael.
Hey, Michael, I sleep on your couch, man? Like, yes. I would love to, like, spend the night at your place, and you can take me.
Well, you know, the thing is that if you were successful in passing a constitutional amendment to use the popular vote, really for the first time, the people of Washington, D.C. would have an equal vote. They would have
right.
an equal vote.
And let me just point out, I wanted to make this point, too.
As a California person.
I want to make this point, too. You know, I think it was either, was it 46%? Only 54% of those eligible to vote voted. Right? 46 per people. 40, and it's because of the Electoral College. You know, if you live in a solid state, a blue state or a red state, you know, I could vote for anybody I wanted. My vote did not count. I knew, everybody knew that Clinton was going to win California. Everybody knew that Trump's going to win Texas. So if you live in one of those kind of places, you don't have any say in, you know, as an individual about what it is.
Well, that's a very strong argument. That is a very strong argument.
It might increase the turnout, is what I'm saying. You might get 75-80% of Americans voting for the president because their vote counts.
Right.
Yeah, but there's the down ballot votes and the initiatives and the propositions and stuff that people care about.
But I'm just saying, you know, if my vote doesn't count, I could have voted for Mickey Mouse. And I would say I didn't vote for either of those two. I voted for neither Clinton nor Trump, and I had the luxury of that. You know, if I lived in Pennsylvania or Michigan, I would have been a lot harder pressed to just vote for a third party. But, I had the luxury, and I don't want that luxury. I would have liked to face that hard decision about who you're going to vote for.
But, you know, ironically, they say that by voting for your presidential candidate, you're actually voting for your elector.
Well I don't know who my electors
exactly
are.
True.
And I don't
when
even
you
know,
vote
you know,
for
they don't
president
even...
because you vote for your candidate, you're actually voting for your candidate's electors.
Well, that's not exactly true. That's not a matter of statute, and we'll talk about this in a minute. That's not a matter of statute. That's just a matter of tradition. But I will say about the voting, you know, the point that Michael's trying to make about increasing voting, I believe that because we know for a fact that those down ballot things don't mean as much as the presidential election. And we've seen it this time, right? This is the way it usually goes. The Republican won, and the Republicans won in both houses as well. So people tend to vote down ballot the way they vote at the top. And here in Washington, I cannot tell you, Maria, how many Republicans say, I don't even know why I bother to vote. I don't even want to go out and vote. We knew that Hillary Clinton was going to win by 90% of the vote. So I'm telling you, I know for a fact it depressed the Republican vote.
Well, hey, you're talking to a Republican in the bluest state in the country.
Right, exactly. Right. You have the same problem. Sure. Right?
Yeah. Right. But you know what's interesting about California is there were more registered voters in California than in the population of 46 states. I mean, that's the behemoth that we are.
Yeah.
But partisanship.
And going back to the electors, I was watching this thing, just, you know, that if you take Wyoming, the smallest state. And I don't know, it's like each elector is worth about 100,000 voters. So they have about 300,000 voters and three electoral college people. So that it's a roughly 100,000 per person. And in California, it works out to 350,000 votes for each elector. So basically, Wyoming's vote is 3.5 times stronger than California on a one-to-one basis. You know, that's
hey,
right.
Michael,
math.
Before
that's
you go, talk about your Facebook page.
Thank you. Page.
So you know, it's very challenging to write an email to the 500,000 people because some of them respond, and then suddenly I have, you know, like 300 emails in my inbox, you know, in 5 minutes or whatever. So what's nice is, so you don't want to do, I might do it once a month, but at the Facebook page, I post daily, one or two or three posts daily, and people can comment on anything, and I get a lot of information. People send links and all that stuff, and if I like them, then I repost them, and, you know, you know, it's an active, it's democracy in action. So it's if you go to Facebook, it's Ban Electoral College, one word. If you search in the Facebook search thing, Ban Electoral College, takes you right there. There's a link to the petition. You know, obviously we're encouraging people to share and invite their friends to like the page and sign the petition. But there's a lot of information in there, and it's not just about mine. The third major thrust that we didn't talk about yet is this idea of it's called the National Popular Vote Electoral Consortium. And the idea is it's in Daily Kos and Democracy for America, and a number of different organizations are promoting this idea, which is getting the state legislatures to do a workaround around the Electoral College, where they say whoever wins the popular vote, no matter how our state voted, whoever wins the national popular vote, we are going to put all our electors, we're going to mandate that all our electors vote for whoever won the popular vote in the nation. So if they can get enough states that add up to 270 electoral votes, they can effectively make the popular vote the will of the people who becomes the president.
Without changing
right now,
the
Constitution? Right now, they have 160 states with 165 electoral votes. They're almost all Democratic. You know, so it, you know, and it will, you know, it'll basically undo the Electoral College without undoing it. It'll change it so that the Electoral College does not decide who the president is if they can get enough states to agree to this deal, essentially.
Well, and, I can tell you where
that's got a lot of legs. That has a lot of legs too. So those are the three main plans to try and figure out a way for the popular vote. To select the president of the United States.
Well, I can tell you, Michael, I think that this has a lot of legs. I think that this is not an issue that's going to go away. I think that you're on the right track. I think a constitutional amendment to abolish the Electoral College, which is really the way to effectively do it, is something that I can see happening someday. It may not happen in the immediate future, but I think this is certainly the beginning of something. But I got to tell you, that last thing, there's no way in the district you would get 94% of the people. You know, we got 94% Hillary did in Washington, D.C., and there's no way you'd get people in Washington who agree to vote for Donald Trump.
Right.
I mean, that last thing, I can't imagine the people of Texas would have cast their votes for Hillary Clinton if she had, you know, because she won the popular vote.
Texas is not part of the consortium. And if you look at the list of all the people on the consortium, it's all, you know, it's a solid blue state. And, you know, so that's, it's all a long shot. The one thing I want to say about ours, the next possible opportunity that we have to be successful is 2020. If we can get a constitutional amendment in 4 years, that would be phenomenally fast. But that's our deadline. I mean, we don't even have to face this. You know, our petition has no impact on who becomes president. You know, the other ones might, but ours is a long-term haul, and the idea is get rid of it forever. Well, make it go away. There's a lot. We didn't even talk about the historical reasons about why it started. I don't know if we have time or not.
Michael and I are going to get into that.
Yeah,
so,
I think it's you know, I think that again, this is something that confuses so many people, the idea of the Electoral College, that it's something that may really happen.
Can I make one last, I mean, this is one important thing that I really wanted to say, because one of the major arguments for keeping the Electoral College is that it protects the small states, and it protects that if we got rid of the Electoral College, that the candidates would only go to the large cities.
Texas, New York,
campaign there.
California,
and there's a lot of people that believe that, and I get the, you know, I get emails and the comments at the Facebook page, and this is like the most prevalent argument for keeping it, that if we got rid of it, you know, the big cities would take over. And the first thing I want to say related to that is, look, we're pretty evenly divided, you know. Everybody got to vote, and the count is currently 63 million to 61.5 million. You know, it's pretty darn close. And it is true that, you know, the blue states are around on the coast, and the red states are around in the center. But,
and we have that situation now, right? Maybe not around the cities, but we certainly, they went 134 times to Florida. That's
right.
Not
the
a
point is now that focus is all on the swing states. It's not about big versus little. It's about, you know, the swing states, and that's where all the action is.
And moving forward, the Rust Belt.
Right. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
The flyover part of our country.
Right.
St. Michael, thank you for taking the time. Thank you for having the passion, and thank you for doing what the senator and I keep trying to promote. One person makes a difference. And
well, you know, I didn't know that until like 500,000 people decided to join me in this last 10 days. You know, it's like, it's
very
quite
flattering.
Remarkable. It is pretty remarkable.
Yeah. So thank you.
And please come back. You'll have to come back. Maybe we can have you back in a before.
How about around December 19th, you know, because it's going to be hot It's going to be hot around that Electoral College voting time.
Let's do that.
Yes, and we'll stay in touch.
Thank you.
And again, Michael, one last time, tell everybody how they can sign your petition. Where do they go?
The easiest way is to go to the Facebook page and find the link. You know, you can go to moveon.org, and it comes up on the home page, as you said. It's just moveon.org. That's probably the easiest way. You can also go to YouTube and YouTube for Eric Holder, Bill Maher. And as I said, it's really good to see, you know, you really should see what Eric Holder has to say about this. The conversation, it's a 5-minute clip, which is awesome. But there is a link to our petition right there. So that's a really excellent place to look for it, too.
Perfect.
Okay.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you again soon.
Bye.
So, yeah. See, so, Michael, I put a petition on moveon.org over 2 years ago. And it was to have the Republican Party delete abortion from their platform.
How many signatures you got?
It got nowhere. I thought it would be wildly successful. But the Democrats like the Republicans to continue to shoot themselves in the foot with the abortion platform. And the Republicans who want abortion in the platform wouldn't sign it. So it was only left thinking socially liberal Republicans, of which I am, and apparently there aren't very many.
Yeah, there's like six of you. You're one of them.
So I was like, never mind. I took it down.
Well, so, you know, let's talk about some of the facts.
Let's do that
right now. First of all, people should know that the Electoral College was set up by the second Article 2 of the Constitution, and it's pretty explicit. I mean, it just doesn't say you should put together an electoral college. It talks about how it's structured, how the electors are actually equivalent to the amount of, to the members of Congress that you have, and actually it was a compromise.
Right.
That's the one thing Michael, I think, was incorrect about, is that it wasn't put in there as a safeguard to keep something like this from happening. It was really a compromise because they didn't want the central government to have too much power. They wanted the states to decide stuff. And I think you can make the argument that at the state level, it is a bit of a safeguard at the state level, but it's really a safeguard against the federal government. It's not a safeguard against any particular candidate.
Well, I heard that it's a compromise between the election of the president by a vote in Congress, as well as an election of the president by a popular vote.
Yes, because they didn't want Congress to decide, and there was at the time in 1789, it was actually earlier than that they were discussing this, that was a big That was the big thing, and this was the compromise. In fact, Madison actually called that in 1787. They used a thing called the Virginia Plan, and Madison actually said that he wasn't crazy about the Electoral College, but that it was a decent compromise.
Well, and what you said earlier in the broadcast is that the electors equals the number of members in the congressional delegation.
Right.
One for each member in the House of Representatives, plus two for the senators. So to think that those folks had that much foresight that long ago really is amazing to me. That it's still unfolding and in play 200 plus years later.
Well, that's the whole system, right? The whole the whole American system. It's amazing that 200 years they were able to plan all this out, because nobody else has been able to do it. We're the longest running form of government, in the world, the longest standing
upstart.
And it was amazing. But some of it, I think, was I don't know if you want to call it dumb luck or you want to call it divine intervention, because some of it was really and I think the Electoral College might fall into this a bit, was that they didn't know what this was going to be. The first time that they'd ever had a population deciding on these things. And there were people inside the guys we call the framers, who didn't believe that common uneducated people, and let's face it, in 1787, not a lot of people were well educated. Probably the average American couldn't read in those days. But there were people that were worried about them doing things like picking the president. So they didn't give women the right to vote, because women were property. They didn't give African Americans the right to vote for the same reason. They didn't even count them as a full person. They didn't give the people of D.C. the right to vote. They were very cautious about these rights because they weren't sure what would happen,
But still they say that here our election is every 4 years on the Tuesday after the first Monday in November. And then the date that Michael, our guest, was referring to as December 19th is the first Monday after the second Wednesday in December. Those kinds of things. It's like, wow, it's almost dizzying when you do that. And then that the votes are counted in the joint session of Congress on the 6th of January, and the vice president, as president of the Senate, presides over that count, and then the president-elect takes the office every January 20th in the year following. I mean, it's amazing the details that somebody said, we got to do this, we got to do that, and lo and behold, we do it.
Well, that you're absolutely right about that. If you read the Constitution, and it's not that long a document, anybody can read it. It is amazing some of the detail that they get into, and just the way they set up the institutions, the balance of power, the court as opposed to the legislature, as opposed to the executive branch. I mean, all these things were brilliant. They were brilliant. And 200 years later, they're still brilliant. But maybe the Electoral College has outlived its usefulness. I mean, it does seem crazy that theoretically, this has never happened, of course, but theoretically, you could not get one single vote in 39 states and still end up being president if you won the 11 biggest states. I mean, that does sound a little crazy, doesn't it?
It does.
I mean, potentially. Now, in this case... Let's first just say, as a guy that's been a loyal Democrat his whole life and was a Hillary superdelegate, there's nothing you can do about this election, y'all. So the 4.5 million people that are signing a petition to have the electors say no, that's just not going to happen. This election is over, and Donald Trump was elected, and that's going to happen. Now, whether we change the the Electoral College for the next time. I think that's an absolutely legitimate thing to do, perhaps.
Well, and our guest suggested as such, too.
Yeah, right. But it's not going to happen that, you know, that the electors are going to flip because, first of all, the country is evenly split. Hillary Clinton did not win by 50 million votes. If she won by 50 million votes, you know what? I'd be one of those people saying, yeah, let's talk the electors into flipping. But she didn't. She won by a handful of votes, considering that there were 126 million votes cast. And she won by a million votes. You know, she won by less than 1%. So when it's that close, there's no justification for invoking anything that radical to begin with.
Well, and we're still counting here in California.
Right.
Hundreds of thousands still, which is interesting. So,
well, but, you know, it's funny how these things work, and that's the way polling works, right? That when they've got the first, they do a random selection, and 5% of the people in California have voted, but they're predicting the winner because the other 95% will fall out pretty much along the same lines that the first 5% have fallen out as long as they picked them randomly. And so I don't think any of this is going to change. I mean, who knows? Maybe Hillary Clinton will win by 2 million votes. But still, it's not enough, in my opinion, to invoke this. And that I think we need to move on and say, okay, if we want to do something like change the Electoral College, that's something to consider for the future. But right now, we have a government to put to get back together, and we need to bring people together around.
I really adore that about you, that's one of your themes that you keep, you know, the healing part, because it is important. And I think it was cute. Obama even said, yeah, you can mope around for a week or a week and a half. But then, you know, the people have spoken, like, get with it. Do you want to talk about his three key appointments that he made on Friday?
Well, let's go. I mean, if you're brave enough to start, let's start Bannon.
Well, I was going to start with retired Army Lieutenant General Michael Flynn for his choice
of
national
security. I really don't know, except the liberal propaganda, which is they don't like him.
Except for I was listening to NPR. It must have been Friday afternoon after he had made the announcement. And they had somebody on who said that he is the greatest political mind in the last, no, greatest military mind in the last 20 years. And that was on NPR, which tends to lean left. And I thought, whoa, for them to say that says something. So I thought that was heartening.
Yeah. And you know what? Maybe it is. I mean, look, when I think of Ronald Reagan, and Ronald Reagan was considered by many, especially Republicans, as a great president. Now, when I was in college, we used to talk about Ronald Reagan exactly the way people talk about Donald Trump on the liberal side. We used to make fun of him. We used to say, oh, he made movies with monkeys. He wasn't even a good enough actor. He wasn't even a good enough actor to have a co-star. He had to hire a damn monkey. You know, but people change when they get to this position.
And people have been saying that the office of president changes the person who occupies it, because there's only so much you can do.
Right. And, you know, you would have said if you knew about the record of Lyndon Johnson, who was one of the great segregationists in Congress, you would have never predicted when he took over for President Kennedy that he would have passed the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act. These are two things, you know, based on his record, based on who he was, those two things should have never happened. But when they asked Johnson about it, when they said, you were such a segregationist, you were so much for separation of the races when you were in Congress, you know, what changed your mind? He said, well, when I was in Congress, I represented the people of Texas, and that's what the people of Texas wanted. Mm. But when I became president, I represented everybody. And it was, you know, and so the paradigm changed for me. And you know, I'm willing, you know, I could go on for an hour about why I dislike Donald Trump, but I'm willing to give, to say, look, let's see if we can work together. Let's accept the will of the people. I mean, for God's sakes, we're a democracy. The people of America have spoken. And right. if we don't like what, and I got to tell you, this just smacks of sour grapes, this 4.5 million people, because if Hillary Clinton had won, those 4.5 million people wouldn't be signing a petition to get, you know, to have the electors change their votes. So you can't change the rules of the game after the game, you know?
Right. But our guest spoke to that it's not about 16, right. it's about right. 20.
Right.
You know, if that, and that's the end game, which I appreciated his, but more than anything, I appreciate the fact that he endeavored to make a change. It got nowhere. And then 4 years later, now we're talking to him. I mean, that's pretty amazing to think about it. That it was just languishing, sitting around, casting, you know, catching mothballs. And then suddenly it's news, which is awesome. But have you been hearing this term alt-right?
Yes.
That's something that is a little scary to me because it originated with extremists. And of course, it's short for alternative right. But I guess it means really right. Like, I haven't heard Christian applied to it because usually you hear right wing Christians. But yeah. Alt-right is gaining popularity in the lexicon because I hear the broadcasters mentioning it as if we all know what that means, which
yeah.
I always find interesting because that means it's part of the lexicon.
Well, yeah, and they determine what that is, don't they, the broadcasters?
Yes, they do.
Yeah, so.
But, you know, Bannon and Reince were picked last week, but since we've chatted, the three key appointments were made on Friday with the retired Army Lieutenant General Michael Flynn, for National Security Advisor, Representative Mike Pompeo of Kansas for the new director of the CIA, and Alabama Senator Jeff Sessions for Attorney General, which I thought was interesting because there was the Bolton and the Giuliani had been
yeah.
floated around, and apparently that's not going to be.
Well, I'm happier with Sessions than Giuliani, but I'm not happy with Sessions. He's way too conservative for me. But you know, again, it's not up to me. If it was up to me, you'd be Secretary of State. you know, but it's not up to me. So I'm willing to give these guys a chance. But I just sense you tap dancing, Maria, around Bannon. What about this guy Bannon? Now, the only thing I will say about him is that
because of Breitbart.
Yes, because of Breitbart. Those people are racist. Come on. Are they not?
I had the privilege of meeting Breitbart,
yeah.
the man, before
yeah.
he passed away. May he rest uh-huh. in peace. And he was actually a reasonable soul. So I don't know if his mission got taken upon his passing and got railroaded, or if that was what it was all along. Can you speak to that?
Well, I don't know if that's what it was all along, but it certainly is.
Because I kind of thought he was like a drudge, if you will. A Matt
yeah,
Drudge.
Well, he is kind of like a Matt Drudge, but Matt Drudge isn't, you know, he's pretty. I would put Drudge in the racist category, too. I think they play on this with people. But the only thing that I will say about being senior advisor to the president is that doesn't mean anything. All it means is whatever the president means, wants it to mean. You know what I mean? It's not like attorney general where you have a specific set of things that
right.
you're responsible for. Secretary of State, the senior advisor, Trump could ignore him if he wanted to. He doesn't have any, you know, now maybe he, you know, that doesn't mean that he will. Maybe he will give him a lot of advice. But what advice Trump takes from him is really, really up to President-elect Trump.
It can be selective. I hear who really has his ear is his son-in-law.
Yeah, that's certainly what the press is saying. But I think, you know, those things will change too. And look, this guy, I think he has already woken up to some of the realities of what he's gotten himself into. I'm not even sure he thought he was going to win. But, you know, I think he's embraced the Republican establishment to a certain extent. You know, things like Mitt Romney. I don't think he's going to get any position in the Trump administration.
Distancing himself from Chris Christie also.
Right, distancing himself from Chris Christie. So he realizes that, hey, look, this is a big damn enterprise. This is bigger than Trump. We need these people to run things, right? Because you can't run the trains without conductors. And, you know, it's funny. I always think of, the famous was it Sherman who marched the Cherokee Indians on the March of Tears, and Chief Justice Marshall said that he wasn't allowed to do that. Jackson. And Jackson said, "Oh, well, let him come down here and stop me." You know, I mean, that's it, right? You can say whatever you want, but you need these people. You're not, you know, you may be the big boss, but you don't run the government.
Right.
And, you know, there's thousands and thousands and thousands of people that do that. So,
well, and then also putting Pence into the position taking over from Chris Christie,
right.
I think, because I know he's a Republican, Michael, but I respect Pence. He seems like he's just a logical, reasonable. He knows how to play the game, but he also is somebody who wants the best for our country. That's how he appears to be. I don't know what your thoughts are on him.
I don't, the thing that always sticks in my craw is that he wants to reprogram gay people. You know, I just came from a gay wedding, literally just a half an hour before I walked in, lovely ceremony, two men that my wife has worked with for years. You can't reprogram, you know, gay people don't need to be reprogrammed. That's what bothers me about Pence. But other than that, I don't know a lot about him. Other than he is an establishment Republican,
yes.
And I think that speaks to his willingness to, you know, to embrace the Republican Party, which is not nearly as scary as everybody, you know what I mean?
Well, in other words, too, Trump is giving him a power so that he can have a Cheney-like vice presidency and not just be the man that smiles beside him.
Well, yeah, let's hope. And I think that's changed over the years. You know, we've certainly seen more and more people take that role. And you know, Alexander Hamilton said that being vice president was unseemly. It was like writing anonymous letters to the newspaper. You know, it was not a dignified thing to do. But I think we've come a long way since then. And it looks like we're out of time, Maria. But look, I want people out there to know that Maria and I were going to try over the next several weeks to try to figure out a way to make everybody work, you know, come up with some solutions for people.
Well,
and
informed based on what happened and how to make the best of it.
Yes. Yes.
So thank you, Mike.
What this says, and I think we're learning a lot of interesting things. You know, we see white college-educated women voting for Hillary and non-college-educated women not voting for her. And I think, you know, one of the things that says is that women without college educations in America feel devalued. And I think we need to this is something that we talked about earlier this week. My mom went to a thing called secretarial school. And she had a professional career where she was president of the PTA for the state of New Jersey, and she worked as a professional in the school system her whole career. I don't think that happens anymore. I don't think you get to be president of the PTA in New Jersey because, you know what, there's 50 moms in the same organization that all have law degrees.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that women, you know, that's – We have to start looking at those little things, you know, like why do these people feel devalued? Why are people so angry? Why is the country so divided? These are the things that we really have to worry about. Why the country so divided?
Well, and why a huge portion felt so neglected and abandoned.
Yeah. And so neglected and abandoned. and why, you know, now this is for me, why as Democrats we didn't understand that. We didn't understand the depth of it. And you know, and I have a friend that tells me that I live here in the bubble of Washington. And you know what? Maybe I do live here in the bubble of Washington. I need to get out more.
On that note, we need to say farewell. We'll see you next week. I hope you have a great week in the interim. Thank you.
Me too. Thanks, America. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.